AM. Good Morning New Hampshire. Weekdays on 107.7 The Pulse.
Number one song on this date, 1964. Were your parents even married in 64?
No.
Wow.
Sorry.
Beatles, Ed Sullivan Show, She Loves You. So your parents weren't, wow. Dr. Karen Boselli is with us from Concord Orthopedics. Karen, great seeing you back again.
Thanks for having me.
You a senior partner yet?
You senior. Should,
yeah.
There's no such thing as a senior partner.
Oh, there isn't?
We're all equal.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. We have an order of seniority. So, I mean, some people have been around.
There's Doug Moran, and then there's everybody else. Well, that's what Doug tells me.
Yeah, but no, there's like once, if you're a partner, you're just a partner. We're all the same. We have the same responsibilities, the same privileges, the same everything, which is actually nice.
I still can't believe you and I are chatting. Before we went on 8 years. It's going to be 8 years you've been
Yeah,
there.
That's crazy.
I remember when you were the newbie.
I know. It's nuts. I'm not even like, I've gotten just bumped down the letterhead. I mean, I'm just really, I'm just in the middle now, middle of the pack.
But that, is there comfort being in the middle?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
I would think there would
yeah.
be.
Yeah. Well, it takes a long time in medicine to really kind of settle into your practice and, you know, get a routine. I mean, in the beginning, it's, you know, things are more sporadic. You might be busy or not busy and, you know, you're still starting to get to know patients and then over time, you know, really your practice builds by taking good care of people. They tell their friends and friends tell other friends. And the next thing you know, your practice kind of just matures into something that's a lot more stable and consistent.
But so you talk about a practice.
Yeah.
Okay. I understand if you're you're my PCP.
Right.
I get that. You're an orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah, people come and go. Right?
So how many times can I blow out a rotator cuff?
I mean, you'd be surprised.
Oh, well, okay. All right. Well, I was going to say, what kind of clientele do you have
well,
that
no,
keeps
you get
coming
different
back?
Problems. I mean, I've had people I've operated on three separate problems.
Have
for
you
them.
Really?
Yeah. Or they just come for, you know, basic advice on something. You know, say you've done a rotator cuff surgery on one side and they're just having a little tendonitis on the other. I mean, it doesn't always amount to something, but you're right. The nature of my business is very transient. I don't have people for
yeah,
their
you would
entire
think one
lives.
And done.
Yeah,
you know?
They come and go and but people circle back. Or like I said, now, especially that I've been around longer, is just friends of people. Well, you did my friend's shoulder replacement, right, so right. You know, I'm coming to see you. So
do you get that?
Oh yeah, all the time.
Do you?
Yeah.
Hi, Karen.
Yes.
It's me. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
yeah.
Then the pressure's on because if their friend did really well, you got to make sure everybody does equally as well.
Now, can you blow out both rotator cuffs?
Like simultaneously?
Yeah.
I suppose theoretically you could.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's rare. I mean, you know, you kind of injure them one of two ways. One is they just kind of go over time.
Right.
Or two would be like actual trauma. And, you
like
know,
skiing, if you feel
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, typically, you'll see either like people who fall on outstretched hands really hard or people who land directly on that shoulder. So it would be hard to land on them both simultaneously. Mm. But I suppose if you fell on two outstretched hands, they could technically go.
Now, does it take the trauma out of it? People are either left-handed or right-handed.
Yes.
So I would think they favor one side or the other.
Right, but that hasn't really played out. As
it doesn't play
a
out.
Factor. No, I'm not aware of any study that's
because
ever
I mean, you know,
that.
this is the hand that I go reach for light bulbs and
yeah,
stuff with.
Yeah.
That I would think I would be more inclined to blow out.
Well, it's not such that like that it's so much of an overuse thing as it is more of just the tendon itself degenerates because of blood supply, and just like the intrinsic qualities of the tissue. So. Again, like there's a lot of different theories on why rotator cuffs fail, and we don't really know the answer. But like I said, it's not really felt that, you know, say repetitively reaching with your dominant arm is the factor so much as it's something within the tissue itself that's not good.
Okay.
There's been associations with things like high cholesterol, with things like obesity, with things like, you know, smoking, like anything that deprives the tissue of oxygen.
Okay, Pat. See, I knew she'd get that in there somehow. So on our break, sorry, but you didn't say anything about the Bailey's Irish cream we were having. Okay, fine. The Irish coffee's fine. The cigarette's bad.
Good Monday morning.
Yeah, great.
Good Monday morning.
Dr. Pacelli's in the house.
I am doing my due diligence as a physician here.
Oh,
I am,
here we go.
I am required.
Man, oh man.
No, but it's true. So basically, it's a blood supply thing. So the tissue eventually, you know, fails for whatever reason. And sometimes, like I said, it's just life. Some people say, why did this fail? I don't know. I mean, Doug Moran himself always says, you know, getting rotator cuff tears is like getting gray hair on your head. It's just, it's literally just, in many patients, it's just a natural process. The tendon just fails over time.
Wow. You're quoting from Chairman Doug.
I know. I quote him on a daily
basis. Oh, my God.
Yep.
Well, there's a fast, a guaranteed fast track.
Yes.
that's good. Does tissue, just as a function of longevity, break down and get brittle or wear down?
It does. Like anything in your body.
So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Whether or not you don't smoke, you're not obese, you're not diabetic, blah, 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 blah. It's just a fact of life. It's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, aging of anything,
okay.
Right? I mean,
okay.
You know, your bones will lose bone density over time. That's just a fact, right?
Yep.
Your skin will, like, change over time. I mean, it's no different than any tissue in your body, but.
You talked about tendonitis. What's the difference between tendonitis and bursitis?
Okay, there are two different things. So itis of anything just means inflammation, basically.
Oh, okay.
So tendonitis is inflammation of whatever tendon, in this case, rotator cuff tendons.
Yep.
And the bursa is like a little sac of tissue that sits right above your rotator cuff, and that can become inflamed. So technically, they're two different things.
Okay.
In practice, they're very similar. They essentially kind of run hand in hand. I mean, the bursa is plastered right to the tendon, so it's almost impossible, say, like in an office setting, to distinguish between the two because really they produce very similar symptoms.
Treatment the same?
Exactly. Yep.
Okay.
Would be
okay.
Physical therapy, anti-inflammatory medicines, cortisone injection, things like that.
So, what would push from that kind of treatment to a procedure?
Well, typically in the middle there might be some sort of MRI. So there are certain red flags we look for on an exam. So things that are making me think like a tear that needs to be dealt with would be if a person has a history of trauma. So say you fall and all of a sudden you can't lift your arm up. That's obviously concerning. People who have a lot of weakness on their exam. So not only do they have pain when I test their tendons, but they have actual weakness when I test their tendons.
Oh, okay.
Makes me think, could it be torn? People who have a lot of like mechanical grinding and catching in the joint, sometimes that can be a little bit of a red flag. And people who aren't getting better with other treatment. So say I have a person who did 6 weeks of therapy, tried an injection, and they're still not better. Then I'm going to start thinking about ordering something more for them. Then if the MRI were to show something positive, you'd have to decide where you'd go from there.
Just about everybody to a man or a woman, and it predominantly men. I don't see a lot of women with rotator cuff injuries.
Well, yeah, I do, but
you do. Okay,
maybe, yeah, maybe.
I'm just saying that mine is anecdotal. Okay.
Yes, yep.
They have said, "Yeah, if I had to do it over, I wouldn't do the damn surgery." You must hear that.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, not a lot in my own patients because that would not be good. For
well,
me,
yeah,
so,
no, I get right. it. I get it.
You know, but nobody looks back on it and says, "Oh, that was, you know, a super fun 6 months." I mean, it's
well, sleeping
it's a long
in the recliner
road.
Because I can't sleep in the bed.
Yeah.
I got to do the. People are miserable.
I know. It takes
they
a
get
long
that,
time.
That little shelf
yep.
that the arm is on.
Well, this is why you want to think it over. I mean, I think it's interesting. I mean, I always chuckle in the clinic because, I mean, I spend half my day talking people out of surgery. I mean, there are so many things, even things like small rotator cuff tears, they don't need an operation. And if you don't need it, why would you have it? So, I mean, I guess I'm pretty conservative and that's, I guess, good. Although, you know, maybe it builds me less surgical business. But I mean, I'm not about to book an operation on every positive MRI finding I see. I mean, the vast majority of these things can be treated more conservatively.
Sure.
And if people are going to get an equivalent outcome, then why jump into something?
Now, you talked about a little tear
and
blood flow.
Yep.
Is it the same as the meniscus?
The cartilage in your knee.
The
right?
cartilage
meniscus,
in your
yep.
knee. Because you talk about blood flow because
can't heal without blood flow.
Is it the same?
Well, I mean, two different tissues. So
right.
That's tendon, that's cartilage.
But the same theory.
The same concept
it?
Is nothing yeah. can heal without blood flow, right? So you definitely figure. So say you have a tear.
Right.
Say we have a 2-centimeter rotator cuff tear. And
is that big?
Well, that's medium, right? Okay, okay, so, okay. And there was no trauma. It just failed because it failed.
Okay.
And so I have this conversation with every patient I book for surgery. I'm going to fix that tissue that already failed because I said the tissue wasn't healthy and the blood supply was bad. Right. And now I'm going to try to make it heal. So you see why there's like a little bit of a challenge there. I'm right. saying that tissue is intrinsically not good.
Yeah.
Now we're going to do an operation on it and hope it does okay. And thankfully, in the majority of cases, it does. Okay. But there are times where the tissue is just too unhealthy to take, right? I can sew it together. We can do the most wonderful job ever.
But if the blood supply isn't there.
Exactly. The okay. tissue can't heal. So that's why you do see some cases of failure. I mean, I'd say there's some reasons that rotator cuff tears will not heal. Sometimes it's patients do crazy things, don't wear their sling, fall off, you know, whatever, and re-injure it. Most of the time, it's not a failure of the hardware or the technical aspects of the surgery. Mm. It's just tissue trying to adhere to bone. And if it can't do it, you know, the tear is not going to heal.
Now, it's my understanding when well drillers...
Where is this going?
Hang on. I'll bring it back. When your well starts running dry, they
yeah.
can go in and hydrofrack.
Oh, okay? Yeah, interesting.
And because you've got all these little veins of water coming in that it may be clogged, may be filled. They go in and hydrofrack. It opens up the veins. Can you see where,
similar
it's see where this is
that
going?
Thank you. That was actually
Thank
good.
Thank you.
You're yeah,
don't sell me short, Karen. I've done this before. There's, so is there any way you can increase the blood supply?
Yeah, that's a great question. So that's, I know,
Thank
this
you.
Is very astute.
Scared like, the hell out of you going into
there
it.
There are researchers all over trying to figure
Thank
this
you.
Out.
Thank you.
The tendon itself, no, it is what it is.
Okay.
What we do surgically is you're sewing the tendon to the bone. So the tendon tears off the bone when you have a rotator cuff tear.
Right.
And there are definitely things you can do to the bone. You can actually poke little holes in it, almost like you're describing.
Okay.
It releases more blood, more marrow. The idea is like more elements that are going to help the two join back together. And then I'd say probably the future of rotator cuff surgery, which we're not quite there yet, is... could you inject a stem cell at the repair site? Could you inject some sort of product that's going to increase healing? And we're not there in 2018, but we probably will be sometime in my career. It's just those things don't exist right now.
In the pantheon of surgeries or, I'm sorry, procedures.
Yes.
Is rotator cuff a big one?
Meaning how, what do you mean by big?
Hip replacement, knee replacement.
Oh, yeah. Extremely.
Is
yeah.
it really?
Well, I mean, in my practice, it's, oh, gosh. I mean, if I had to guess, it's probably 60% of what I do.
No so, kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the most common thing I operate on for sure.
Is the majority of it age or is it trauma?
I'd say it's probably about degenerative, probably about 70-30, just degenerative ones versus traumatic. If
from
I had
from
to
your
say.
Standpoint, which is easier to work on or does it matter?
It usually depends on tear size. You know, the more tricky ones are the big, giant, retracted tears. I mean, if you have a...
Can be, okay, you said two
so
centimeters.
So tiny tear could be millimeters in size.
Oh,
right?
Really?
All the way up to... massive tear that involves three tendons could be 6 or 8 centimeters in size. So, you know, and so the technical complexity of the case to me is usually just based on kind of the size of the tear that you're dealing
now,
with.
Now, the millimeters, mm-hmm. small. That's right. going to impede me?
Yeah, and you'd be surprised. I mean,
really?
The shocking thing is, I mean, I see people who come into my office with massive, massive injuries and they're kind of okay. And I see people who come in with tiny tears who are miserable, absolutely miserable. So they can't sleep at night, it's throbbing. So the size of the tear doesn't necessarily always correlate with a person's pain level, which is a little challenging to put together.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I know you wouldn't guess, right?
No, I would think big, but yeah, ripping three tendons, you'd think.
Well, when it's acute, don't get me wrong. I mean, if you fall and rip three tendons off the bone, you're going to be dysfunctional. You're not going to be able to lift your arm or do things. But I mean, I have people, you know, a guy will say, well, you know, I was a Mason for 35 years and my shoulder's always been a little sore. And you get this MRI and it's like, oh my God, you know, I mean, the tendons are completely gone, but the person is kind of getting by, right? You know, they're not there because they're in agony. They're there because they've had chronic soreness or weakness.
I won't lift my arm anymore.
Right.
I just, you know.
That's one solution.
Well, isn't that the old joke? Doc, it hurts when I do this. Well, don't do that.
Don't do it. Well, yeah, we try not to go there in the office. But many people choose to live with it. I mean, especially I'd say for me, my over 80 population, I mean, you'd be surprised what people are willing to live with. Things that sometimes we can fix and they say, I'd rather just avoid that activity.
I mean, is there a point in your life, over 80, is there a point in your life where you'll say, yeah, I'm not sure you really need to have
yeah.
this done?
Oh, yeah. We have that conversation a
do,
lot. Yeah.
Do.
Well, and I mean, people, I mean, you see people in their 80s who are living super active, healthy lifestyles and people in their 60s who are not. So it's not just the number. It's kind of looking at the whole picture. I would say for things like joint replacement surgeries over 90 is where we really start saying, you know, but we operate on people in their 80s, I'd say, fairly regularly.
Wow.
Not necessarily for rotator cuff surgery, but things like joint replacements, shoulders, knees, hips, things like that.
So what else? I know I got off on the rotator cuff, but what else do you do?
Surgery-wise?
Yeah.
So I'd say probably, like we said, maybe 60% is things like rotator cuff surgery. Probably another 20% is shoulder replacement surgery for me. I do instability surgery, so recurrent shoulder dislocations, ACL surgery, meniscus surgery. So, but, you know, shoulder, like arthroscopic surgery is a big portion of it just because it's so so prevalent.
Is this getting boring at all?
No, not at all.
No?
Gets more interesting.
I'm just wondering if you were going to add something to your resume.
No, I don't plan to. Really? I mean, you know, it's always good. You want to kind of challenge yourself. But, I mean, I'd say at this point, like, you know, you have kind of like your repertoire of things you're comfortable doing.
Right.
You want to maintain all of those. But, you know, I think it's not necessarily like a need to expand. I mean, I feel like I'm kind of doing what I need to do for my patients. And if there was something that I felt like I had to add a skill, I mean, the nice thing about medicine is you can always attend a course, a meeting, a lab, something to try to expand what you're doing. And you want to push yourself. I mean, we all do that. But, you know,
you mean a golf outing or a scuba diving
vacation?
Is that? Oh, I'm sorry.
This is not like 80s anymore. We don't get a lot of free scuba outings.
It's been a while since I've been to a doctor's getaway. All right, Karen? Are you busy or are you, do you have, this is the only thing I care about. Are you having time to cook?
Oh yeah. No, I'm still cooking.
Are you?
Good. Yeah.
See, we got a giveaway someday. We won't tell her. Just have Dr. Pasale come in and cook for you.
Hey,
I would love that.
She's a fabulous cook.
I would love that.
I could do that.
Yeah.
I can bake you something. Like maybe next time we'll do like cinnamon rolls or something good for the morning.
I was hoping for the arthroscopic chicken, but that's
okay. God. Yeah, watch her put the veins back together before we eat it. Beautiful.
So gross.
God, no, we're not doing that. Karen, it's always a blast seeing you.
Thank you for having me.
You in the office today?
Office and then surgery. Little of everything
Ooh.
This week. Yes.
Where else besides Concord are you?
I'm in Wyndham.
Okay.
So only two offices for me. I used to go to Derry. Now I'm just in Wyndham.
Okay.
So, yep, it's great.
That working out well?
Oh, awesome. Yeah, busy down there. It's really good.
Leave me a copy of your quotations from Chairman Doug so I can
freshen
up before he comes back. Dr. Karen Baselli from Concord Orthopedics. Thanks, Karen.
Thanks.
It is 7:31. We are going to take a break. Back with more.
We start your day the right way. Good Morning New Hampshire with Peter St. James and Pat Kelly. Weekdays, 6 to 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Pulse.